The last few days, I've been learning not to trust people, and I'm glad I've failed. Sometimes we depend on other people as a mirror to define us and tell us who we are, and each reflection makes me like myself a little more.
Previews of coming attractions.
All right, welcome to Sunday Night in Cinema 3. Opening this week, in theatrical new releases, we've got a gothic horror film called Winchester, starring Helen Mirren. It's based on an allegedly true story of a widow who was the heir to the Winchester fortune and who used her money to build a giant strange house that was intended to capture and contain ghosts. The trailer seems to imply that the strategy worked a little too well. It seems reasonably suspenseful, but I don't feel compelled by the trailer to catch it on the big screen, so I'll wait for Netflix on that one. In limited release, there's an undoubtedly more authentic true life story called The Cage Fighter about Joe Carman, who at the age of 40 risked everything in order to stage a comeback. Also in limited release is A Fantastic Woman, starring trans actress Daniela Vega fighting discrimination, and a dystopian science fiction film called Scorched Earth, starring Gina Carano as a bounty hunter. I do love Gina Carano, so I'll keep an eye out for that one. New on home video this week are Tyler Perry's Boo 2, A Medea Halloween, which I will probably pass on, Dr. Marston and the Wonder Women, a new documentary about the triad of people who created the first major female superhero, and The Square, last year's Palme d'Or prize winner at Cannes, starring Elizabeth Moss and Dominic West, and God's Own Country, starring Josh O'Connor and Alex Sicarianu. I don't see any here that I would care to own, but I would like to see the Wonder Woman documentary and The Square at some point. Finally, a streaming recommendation this week in the form of an apology. Sometimes I make the cardinal critical mistake of judging something before I see it. I did that this week when I snarked with a friend over Twitter about a new film on Netflix called A Futile and Stupid Gesture, which is a biography of the comedy legend Doug Kenny, who co-founded National Lampoon, and wrote the screenplays for Animal House and Caddyshack. The film's directed by David Wayne, and stars Will Forte along with a truly impressive cast of comic actors, playing an earlier generation of comic actors. But I hated on it before I saw it, thinking it would be a big circle jerk for baby boomers. I should have given David Wayne more credit. It's a very funny and smart film, subverting what you would usually expect from a biopic, and also doing a pretty good job of finding the same tone of intellectual and yet scatological comedy that National Lampoon had. So I recommend you check it out if you haven't already.
Previously on Sunday Night in Cinema 3.
And 10 years ago, this weekend in Cinema 3, it was Cloverfield. And in retrospect, this cast is pretty amazing. There's Lizzie Kaplan, TJ Miller, Odette Annable. The found footage device was obviously around for some time by the time this came out, and in my opinion, it's a device that doesn't usually add so much value to telling a story, but the combination of handheld camera and smart staging and editing did make this a really compelling movie. It was closer as well to 9/11 then, of course, which gave it perhaps a bit of an extra dimension of terror. The obvious descendant of Cloverfield is its sort of sequel, 10 Cloverfield Lane, but I also see elements of it in films like Chronicle or even VHS. It's interesting that it was released so early in the year. I wonder if the studio thought it wouldn't do well. And speaking of which, Odette Annable starred in another movie that my wife and I saw together on one of our first dates in January of 2009, the following year, a supernatural stinker called The Unborn. Anyway, Cloverfield was easily the best film that I had seen so far in Cinema 3 at that point, and one of the best films I saw all year. It was the first film written by Drew Goddard and the first directed by Matt Reeves since The Pallbearer in the late 90s. Watching it again now, in a weird way, it reminds me of a modern, much more sincere version of a 70s disaster film, like The Towering Inferno, which would mix dramatic personal storylines with insane property damage. In any case, it holds up pretty well. In my mind, it had diminished over the years, and when I saw 10 Cloverfield Lane, I figured that was the better film, but now I'm not so sure. And I wonder if they plan to do another one. There have been mutterings over the years of combining these with the new Godzilla and King Kong film universe somehow, but I don't know. maybe it would be best to keep the monsters in this series at arm's length.
Intermission.
I was thinking earlier about what I said about the cardinal sin of not judging something that you haven't seen. And it reminded me of something that's happening in comics fandom, and I suppose it's always happened to some extent, but it seems especially intense now, where there's a core group of self-appointed gatekeepers trying to dictate to the creators, publishers, and other fans what the canon should be for characters. So, for example, for them, the only acceptable Captain Marvel might be the Kree warrior Mar-Vell, not Carol Danvers. Or only Peter Parker can be Spider-Man, not Miles Morales. If it sounds like those complaints are more about sexism and racism than any kind of legitimate criticism, you're correct. These are the same kind of morons that start a petition demanding that Rian Johnson admit that The Last Jedi is a terrible film because so many of the key characters are women. They throw around words like SJW and cuck as if these 4chan insults mean anything in the real, rational world. Anyway, it's unfortunate this dynamic exists and that artists have to deal with hateful fringe elements. The very late and often still rather faint efforts in mainstream media to tell diverse stories through diverse characters is a long overdue correction to our culture and our media, and an important one at a time when the media owners themselves are consolidating. When you have a popular property like Star Wars or Batman that appeals to multiple generations of fans, we should expect the property to evolve with the times, and that includes the morality of the times. I remember laughing hard at a Captain Marvel serial from the 40s, where Shazam thought nothing of throwing a gunman over the edge of a roof to his certain death. It's hard to imagine a superhero doing that now, except maybe for Deadpool. The point is, what you cherish from your childhood was part of a cultural time and place, and today's filmmakers cannot completely recreate the summer of 1982 to immerse you in while you watch their new version of the thing you liked as a kid, nor should they. They want to capture your kid's imagination in the visual language that your kid understands, and they hope that you want your kid to be happy the way you were once too. If you don't like the direction of a franchise you liked for a while, fine. There's plenty of other stuff to be a fan of, and you never know, that gum you like might very well come back in style. In fact, I'd almost be shocked if it didn't.
And now, our feature presentation.
And this week from my DVD collection, it's a film called My Blueberry Nights. It was released in 2007, directed by the wonderful Wong Kar-wai, with a brilliant cast including Jude Law, Natalie Portman, David Strathairn, Rachel Weisz, and musician Nora Jones. Like all of Wong Kar-wai's pictures, it's beautifully filmed, filled with warm lights and soft focus and neon. Unlike his other films, it's set in someone's dream of New York City with an English-speaking cast. My copy of the DVD came from the late great Video Difference here in Halifax, which went out of business last year. And there will be other films from the Video Difference clearance sale coming up this year on the podcast, and probably at least one more Wong Kar-wai picture too. Anyway, watching this now, it really reminds me of the kind of film Richard Linklater might make, really deeply looking at a group of characters and having a strong sense of place. Nora Jones isn't the strongest actor, unfortunately, but she does hold her own. I have a feeling that somebody told her at some point, less is more when it comes to acting, and she took that to mean do as little as possible. Rachel Weisz, on the other hand, is doing a pretty dead-on American accent while dialing her energy up to 11. The film also reminds me of the Japanese writer Haruki Murakami, with his tales of desperate and lonely characters looking for redemption at the bottom of a glass. It's very overwrought sometimes, and romantic and melancholy. The cast doesn't so much converse as make pronouncements. My Blueberry Nights is technically a road movie, starting in New York and following Nora Jones to Memphis, then to Las Vegas, meeting other characters along the way and listening to them, the way that Jude Law listened to her in New York. Meanwhile, she writes postcards to Jude Law at his cafe, and he tries to call her back so he can tell her he cares about her. One more comparison occurs to me, and that's the episodic nature of the structure of the movie and the correspondence and the kind of jerky digital video editing effects remind me of the early 90s syndicated series Red Shoe Diaries, starring David Duchovny. It even has a score by Ry Cooter, though I don't recall hearing much music apart from the Nora Jones songs that swell up at crescendos. Watching it again now, My Blueberry Nights is a strangely quaint picture, one that feels like it could be set in the 1950s if it wasn't for the modern cars and clothes. It's a film about longing and passion, and the danger that can come with both. In that respect, it's like pretty much all of Wong Kar-wai's other pictures, like In the Mood for Love, 2046, and Chungking Express. In terms of his career, it's more in the middle of the pack, but if you get a chance, I do recommend checking it out.
Roll the credits.
Sunday Night in Cinema 3 is produced, written, and recorded by Scott Marshall, that's me, with much appreciated help from Nicole Slip and the nice people at the Central Branch of the Halifax Public Library. Sunday Night in Cinema 3 is copyright 2018 by Scott Marshall, all rights reserved. Please send your feedback, questions, or concerns to Sunday Night in Cinema 3, that's the number 3, not the written out word 3, at gmail.com or through social media. Visit SundayNightInCinema3.com for our links to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and whatever other social media platforms I can stand to deal with. This podcast does not have any advertisements because I figure we all have enough advertising in our lives, but it does have some modest expenses. So if you'd like to support the podcast, you can check out my Patreon at patreon.com/ScottMarshall. That's 2 T's, 2 L's. For as low as $1 a month, you will have exclusive benefits, including outtakes and bonus material from the podcast, a heads up on what's coming up from me, and access to other exclusive digital content that I haven't even thought of yet. The Patreon also has a community forum where you can talk to each other or ask me questions, and if you subscribe for $5 a month or more, you will receive regular packages of physical stuff from me in the mail, including comics, art prints, stickers, game prototypes, and whatever else I can think of to send. Whatever you do, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. See you next Sunday in Cinema 3.
Good night.